Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and of course, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Daniel Harms, who's a member of the Radio Liberty family, as a farmer. And we wanted to talk to him about what's really going on as far as the farms. What is the plight of the family farmer today? And certainly, how is the run-up in the price of diesel fuel and of petrochemicals and other things affecting them? Certainly, the price of many of the products and many of the crops is going up. But what's really happening to the farmers? So without further ado, Daniel, thank you very much for being with us.
Good evening, Dr. Stan.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners where are you farming? How long you been farming? Has this farm been in the family for a long time? I know you love to farm, but tell us what's really going on.
Yes, we have had some ground to farm quite a while. One or two pieces of ground's been in the family over 100 years. I came home from college in 1972 after graduating from the University of Illinois with a degree in biology. At that time, soybeans had hit an unprecedented high of about $12, and farming looked pretty good. I was tired of school, and I thought, well, I'll just go home and farm with Dad. And he made room for me, and I've been farming now. This will be my 36th year since that. I've seen quite a few changes, quite a few ups and downs.
All right. Well, are we on the ups or are we on the downs right now?
Well, oddly enough, this is a time very similar to when I came home from college. We've had one time in the 80s similar to it in between. We're seeing some all-time highs in grains, or we did until the 4th of July. And if you were lucky enough to get some of your input costs bought last fall, this should still be a pretty good year, even though prices have backed off some. What we're all worried about is the cost-price squeeze that's coming next year.
All right. Now, do the farmers actually use the commodity market at all to secure their profits?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's very risky, just like everything else we do, but it can be done if you've got the guts to do it and the money to back it up. But this year has cleaned a lot of plows for people that thought they had a program in place that would work, because it's just gone way past where anybody thought prices would go. They've got margin calls to put them out. There's farmers that had programs for pricing ahead a large part of their crops, and if you get a $2 margin call on several hundred thousand bushels, it'll eat you alive.
It sure will. What is soybeans bringing right now?
Let's see. Today, I believe they closed around $14. They hit a high of 15-something here about July 3rd.
Now, of course, then, what's corn doing?
Corn has gone from, I called the elevator the day before the 4th of July thinking I would price some corn, but I was waiting on a rain and I had some other considerations. I thought, well, I'll have a day or two after the 4th. That day, July 3rd, I could have gotten $7.03 for fall delivery corn at the local elevator.
That's a per bushel?
Per bushel, yes. A bushel is 56 pounds of corn, 60 pound of beans, or 60 pound of wheat. Today, I didn't actually call in, but I would guess I would be offered maybe in the neighborhood of five and a half.
All right, so we're talking a couple of dollar bushel actually fall, because that gets me quite a bit of money. How many bushels would you get off of an acre of a farmland?
Well, that's what we'd all like to know. We can't count on the rain. We might have quite a variation in yields. But for an average, on the better soils where I'm at, 130 to 140 is a pretty respectable yield for corn, 40 to 50 on beans. We've had a very good year on wheat. We got about a 70-bushel average on wheat, which is unusual. We usually are happy with 50, 55.
Okay, you hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment with Daniel Harms. He's beginning to talk about the plight of the farmer and, of course, what's going to happen. All right, fine. Well, why don't you pick the story up there? Of course, that sounds like quite a bit, a lot of money. How much land do you actually farm?
Well, when I came home from school, Dad and I were farming roughly 1,000 acres, and that's roughly still what we're farming. We took a strategy of trying to get out of debt and farm efficiently on what we had, but we've watched the size of operations around us grow astronomically. There's two or three people around here that's farming 5 and 10,000 acres now. Of course, they hire a lot of help. They're mostly managers, but the structure of agriculture is changing because of some political policies that have been in place for a number of years, and because of what's been happening with the dollar and inflation. It seems that we're moving into a more corporate agriculture. However, I hasten to add that most of these large farms are still held closely by families and are managed by families. There's not too many that I know of in this area that are owned by an absentee corporation. Most of the farms are incorporating to save on taxes and the inheritance taxes, as well as, you know, operating expenses. There are different ways you can structure things to make that tax burden a little less, you know. So, you know, even though I'm still at 1,000, a lot of my neighbors are 1,500, 2,000, 3,500 in their family farms. There's a few, though, that are getting up in the 10,000-acre range, but most of those folks are still local. They're not some corporation off in the distance. Now, where they get their money and how they make it work, I've not figured that part out. But anyway, there's still a lot of family farms. That's the point I want to make. They're just getting bigger.
Well, of course, now, are the farmers still pretty well dependent upon the bank to lend them in the spring and so that they can pay back in the fall? Or are the farmers pretty independent? They don't have to go to the banks.
You find all kinds. The younger farmers, of course, borrow a lot. The older farmers that have been lucky and managed well sometimes have quite a bit of land paid for. I'm very lucky. Because we chose the strategy of getting out of debt. See, I lived through the 1980s with interest rates hit 18%, and that liked to kill us. I swore if I ever got out of debt, I was going to try to stay out of debt. So I haven't bought a lot of land. Right now, that doesn't look too smart with the way things have gone. But anyway, I'm fortunate that I don't have to borrow too much of my money. I do have a piece of land I'm buying from my dad. It's got a contract for deed kind of deal, but I don't go to the bank for all of my money. I have an operating loan with the Production Credit Association I can draw on in the spring if I need extra funds. That's got an $80,000 cap on it. I know that sounds like a lot of money, but that's not big money farming. I'm sure there's a lot of these bigger operations that borrow millions, and they are beholden to the banks. And sometimes they get better treatment from the banks because the banks have more to lose if they go under.
All right, will you hang on there for just a moment, and we'll be back with Daniel Harms. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Daniel's will be talking about the plight of the farmers, and of course, the most around where he lives. What state are you in?
Illinois. I'm sorry, I didn't go ahead and mention that. I farm in southern Illinois.
All right, fine. And most of the farms are family-owned farms. There's corporate farming, but not necessarily where he is. Some of them are 2,000 or 3,000 acres. Some of them are 10,000 acres. He farms 1,000 acres, but it's pretty well secure. He doesn't have a lot of debt. Now, you were talking, Daniel had written me a letter. It was one reason I wanted to have him on. He was talking about, of course, how the price of diesel fuel and the price of petrochemical fertilizers, and then, of course, the price of potash and other things that they use in their farming is going up. So go a little bit into the background of that. Certainly most people don't even know that petrochemical fertilizers actually come from natural gas, don't they? That's where the ammonia comes from?
Yes. It's made from natural gas. It used to be made from natural gas produced in the United States. However, due to EPA regulations, a lot of power plants in this country have found out that they can burn natural gas because at the time they started it was cheaper and it was cleaner. Now it has gone up a lot. That's why some of the electric bills across the country are rising rapidly. And to replace the natural gas we're using here, suppliers of fertilizers have been purchasing the nitrogen products from countries like China and Russia, who also have abundant supplies. And the bad part is, now that the dollar has gotten very weak, those products are getting very expensive, as is the diesel prices. So we're getting into a very tight price, cost-price squeeze. And if you really want to get in some nuts and bolts and numbers about this thing, I'd encourage anybody that wants to get on the Internet and type in Farm Doc, FARMDOC, at the University of Illinois. And there's a paper published July 11, 2008, titled Dramatic Increases in Corn and Soybean Costs in 2009. Now, the bottom line is our costs are going up, and fortunately for grain farmers, our price for grain has led these costs during the last year and a half. But for livestock producers, it's been just the opposite. While our grain prices were going up, they needed our grain to feed their livestock, and their prices did not go up. They've been hurting for about a year already.
I understand a lot of the people who have herds, the dairy cows or certainly beef, are actually slaughtering those because they just can't afford to feed them. Is that right?
I'm not aware of that, but it's coming. I mean, animals are not being replaced for breeding. They're probably being fed out, and the older ones are being culled, I'm sure. And that's going to get worse. And it might actually drive the price of meat down short term, but there won't be any breeding stock left to produce later on. So it's really kind of good for the livestock producers that these grain prices have begun to break. But I talked to a rather large hog operator this evening at our county fair, and he had a rather long face. I mean, even though it's back down to $5 for corn, he was used to $3 and still having trouble sometimes there. So it's really been hard on the livestock producers.
All right. Now, you mentioned something about potash. What's potash, and is that something I'm sure you spread on the fields, but what does it do?
It's one of the essential plant nutrients. The three most important ones are nitrogen, phosphate, and potash. A lot of the potash comes out of Canada and some out of Florida, and I'm sure some overseas. The phosphates, I'm not sure where those are produced. Probably several places around the country and over the world, but just a lot of our input prices are going up, and it's getting harder to make ends meet again. The grain farmers have enjoyed a little windfall here for about a year, but we can see the day coming when it's going to, you know, back to business as usual and wondering how you're going to make it. It's the net, Dr. Stan, that pays the bills. It's not the gross.
Well, that's pretty self-evident, but what you're suggesting is that next year, in 2009, that with a lowering of the value of the dollar, with a rising, relative rising, and increase in the price of your fertilizer, certainly of your phosphate and your potash, and then, of course, if the diesel fuel price remains up there, you're going to have a hard time making ends meet. Is that the basic story?
That's the story. That's what the university paper I mentioned is about. Up until about 2 years ago, a fairly significant part of what a farmer had left over to live on was from farm subsidies. And unfortunately, it looks like we may be crying again here soon. Of course, farmers sometimes are their own worst enemy. They maybe buy more equipment than they should sometimes because they want to save on taxes and use up their depreciation. And they get a little anxious to buy farm ground a lot of times because, you know, it's the lifeblood of farming is having those acres. But sometimes you kind of lose your judgment and bid a little too much on that ground.
So, well, because isn't farmland pretty expensive at the present time, or is it coming down?
Yeah, it's doubled, too, in the last 2 years. It makes it very scary because with the economic situation we're looking at, we just don't have any bearings to know whether or not this is going to be a price for land that we can make work or not. If things crash, there's a lot of people going to be hurt bad.
Well, of course, you're in a position where you certainly not don't have a lot of land you're having to pay for. Isn't that a real advantage for you?
If I could continue to rent from my landlords, yes. Unfortunately, they're getting older, and I can't afford to buy them all out at once, and the current situation makes it kind of risky to buy any of them out, so I don't know what to do. Have to pray about that one, I guess.
No, then the 1,000 acres your farm is next to all your own land, then.
Oh, no. I own about 140. I rent a couple, I think 280 from my dad and my aunt. The rest of the ground we rent from farm families that we have known for decades. Many of them used to farm, and now the children continue to rent to us after their parents died. We're very, very fortunate that we know all of our landlords personally. We've had a good relationship with them. Now, the structure of agriculture is changing. A lot of the farmers now pay cash rents, and it's getting to be a bidding war every spring to see who gets to farm certain acres, and there's no stability there. It's hard to make long-term payments on machinery. when you don't know if you're going to be farming any acres at all next year. And even if you do get the land, sometimes the cash rents are so high that you can't even make it at current prices. So I really don't know how these super farmers make it and pay the cash rents they do. I just haven't been able to pencil it out.
Well, now, Chris, do you actually have combines or pickers come in, pickers for the corn, or do you have these yourself?
In our area, everybody owns their own set of equipment. And mine is getting rather old. I continue to maintain it well. New stuff is astronomical. The last combine I bought, oh, it was 16, 18 years ago, listed for $220,000. A similar machine today would be at least double that.
Now, the combine, is that what, that's for wheat?
I use it for corn, beans, and wheat. The separator part of the combine is the same in either case, but we change heads. We have a corn head for the corn, and then we have what's called grain table for the wheat and the beans.
All right, fine. So you're talking about $500,000 for one of these, machines.
That's just one piece of equipment. I mean, to replace all the equipment I have would cost $3 or $4 million if you bought it all new and state of the art. Of course, I don't. I buy used. But back to these prices, if I may. One thing I really want to point out to your listeners, especially the folks who live in town, I got a call from a retired landlord in Chicago tonight. Actually Peoria area, and other folks there where she lives are very, very upset with the farmers for the high price of food in the grocery store. I hope people will just do a little math with me here. Even if wheat were $12 a bushel still, the price of wheat and a loaf of bread would just be 40 cents. So if you're paying $2.50 for a pound of bread wherever you're at, just remember the farmer's only getting 40 cents. And that's figuring $12 a bushel. It's back down to 5-something now, so it's really closer to 20 cents. So and a lot of the price you see on your bread products is the wrapper, the advertising, the print on that wrapper, all the handling charges, the grocery store's profit, the trucker's profit, the miller's profit, the baker's profit, and a lot of and everything along the line adds to it. So, you know, the price of food may seem like it's gone up. I mean, it has gone up a lot. It has to. We've had an artificially low price of food in this country for a long time because we've had a cheap dollar and cheap energy. And the world's changing that picture for us. But the farmer is suffering right along the rest of you with the increased costs. And what he gets out of your loaf of bread is maybe 20 to 40 cents.
Well, I think, of course, we're all victims of a system where they've corrupted the value of our dollar, where they're destroying the value of our currency, and they're doing it intentionally. They're really aimed at impoverishing the American people because there's, you know, right now, of course, they're lying about the rate of inflation. They tell us, oh, core inflation 2%, and maybe inflation might be up to 4%, terrible. You know, well, the consumer price index is about 7%. The real rate of inflation is about 12.5%, and they're simply lying so that they can cheat the elderly and their Social Security benefits. They're people who bought Treasury index bonds. They can cheat them, too. God, this whole thing is a scam. But people don't understand that the best way to impoverish the people is to destroy the value of their currency. And we're all trapped in this same quagmire, Daniel, and we have to understand what one another's problems are. And, of course, there are a lot of farmers who are really worried about what next year is going to bring.
Oh, yeah. They're not stupid. They can see this coming. They still haven't discouraged them from trying to rent a few more acres or buy some land. I think that'll take a little more bloodletting before they give that up. But the well, you mentioned the currency problem. That's a fundamental problem. We're all facing that. And one of the key things to dealing with this without chaos is to educate the American people. And of course, we're not getting any help from the media or the politicians.
Because that's what we do 5 hours a day.
Yeah.
I mean, at least we're reaching a few of them. And how do you get our programs on shortwave?
I just get your newsletter, frankly.
Okay, fine.
I sit around and listen a lot of times.
All right, fine. Well, look, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Daniel, you want to know what's going on with the farmers, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But, ladies and gentlemen, we're in real trouble on every front. Well, certainly price of diesel, has the price of diesel started to drop with the dropping of the price of oil?
Oh, no. I don't think that'll work back through for months. I'd be surprised if I see my diesel price go down till after harvest.
What were you actually putting out for diesel now?
I filled my tanks here recently at $4.38. A year ago, I filled them for $3, I think.
So we're talking about almost a 50% increase on the price of your diesel fuel.
Yeah, and 2 years ago, I probably filled them for 2.5, you know.
And of course, basically, how much diesel do you actually use in the farms? You know, to farm 1,000 acres.
Oh, let me think a minute. I probably use 4,000 or 5,000 gallons a year.
4,000 or 5,000 gallons a year. Well, that gets up. You know, they're talking $20,000 or more. Close to $25,000 then for diesel.
I spent roughly $400 an acre on my crop this spring, and if we double crop some wheat, it's hard to figure exactly what it works out to per acre, but me and my landlords together, I'd estimate we spent close to $500 or $600. Oh, wait a minute, let me back that off. Probably $400,000 just putting out the crop.
Now, does that include the fertilizer, or is that...
Yes, I was trying to include everything.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Joe, who's calling us from Michigan. Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Are you a farmer, or are you a city grower like me?
Yeah, you know, this year I have 5 acres, and I turned 40 acres into corn. so I wouldn't have to cut my grass, and I could make some money off it.
All right, fine. How's the crop doing?
Doing pretty good. Not too bad. It was knee high by the 4th of July.
All right. Why was that? That's the old saying. Knee high by the 4th of July. And
yeah.
That's so anyway, it's coming right on.
Yeah.
So did you have a question or comment for our guest?
I do. I've heard now, I just want to see if your guest has heard this, from a pretty good source that there's approximately 17 farms in the country, large farms producing enormous amounts of corn for ethanol production. And I've been told that the vast majority of those farms, if not all of them, have gone bankrupt because of the high price of corn. They're no longer doing it. And I've been told that as their bankruptcy proceedings go all the way through, the price of corn is going to drop dramatically because there's not going to be the demand.
You're talking about the demand for ethanol.
Right.
All right. Have you heard anything at all about that, Daniel?
No, I do know that there's been some ethanol plants that were planned that have been scrubbed, and there's been one or two I know of that folded because they just couldn't complete production. Until the government backs off on their policy to have a certain percent of the national fleet use ethanol, it probably will be most of these plants will go ahead, but there's such pressure from consumers that I'm hearing that the government may have to back off on these new ethanol standards, you know. So if that happens, yes, there's going to be even more plants probably won't make it. A lot of these plants, I believe, were planned when corn was $3, too. So, you know, once it doubled,
right.
It scared them all out, you know.
Yeah, I was told that because the price went so high, they can no longer, they can't afford it, so they're going bankrupt.
I get conflicting reports on that. You know, I've heard people say that they can really make it with higher corn than they let on, but I really don't know how to answer your question on that. And what you said about the 17 huge farms supplying the plants going broke, that's news to me too, but you know,
hold that stuff right now.
All
we'll
right.
Be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have Joe calling from Michigan. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And Joe was just saying he'd heard of rumors about some 17 very large farms, corporate farms that get into real trouble and that were going bankrupt. Talking certainly about this problem with ethanol, and of course about 25% of our corn crop is going into the production of alcohol, which of course is the stupidest thing in the world. First of all, back in the year 2005, Congress enacted the energy bill, and in that energy bill, in an effort to have America become energy self-sufficient, they decided that they would mandate that ethanol be added to to alcohol, about 10% ethanol, the rest would be, pardon me, 10% ethanol, the rest would be gasoline. And this was supposed to solve our problem. Of course, the problem was that they were going to use corn to create the ethanol. They couldn't have found a more expensive product to do that with. They could have done it with sugar beets or with sugar cane, much less expensive. We could have actually imported from Brazil at a considerably lower price, but they wouldn't want to do this. It was a boondoggle, and of course, they appropriated some $7 billion at that time to give to the people who are producing ethanol, and they produced 4.2 billion barrels, as I remember, of ethanol, and they got $7 billion for it, so they were getting about $1.45 a gallon for every gallon of ethanol they produced. That was a subsidy. They just got that in addition to whatever they could get on the market for their ethanol. Well, it was a stupid idea because, of course, it began to run up the price of corn, and then running up the price of corn ran up the price of corn that was used for feed, and, of course, then, of course, it ran up the price of chickens and eggs and milk, and then, of course, it put the dairy farmers and the cattle farmers and the hog farmers and even the people who are growing suddenly farm fish like catfish in the South, they just couldn't afford the meal, the soybeans and the price of corn anymore. And they're all shutting down. The farmers, some of them are slaughtering their herds, are going to have to slaughter their herds. Same thing as far as the hog farmers. And so the law of unintended consequences, there's no problem facing America today that a new congressional law won't make worse. What are your thoughts on that, Joe or Daniel?
Joe first. Well, I agree 100%.
Okay, Daniel.
Well, there's trade-offs on everything. A lot of times the best intentions do have unforeseen consequences, and what you just described is one of them. Of course, our farm program had its roots in the food shortages in Europe after World War II, and our government benevolently wanted to have a stable food supply. So that was the basis behind a lot of the original legislation for encouraging farmers to produce and guaranteeing them a fair profit, so that we wouldn't have these huge swings in the markets. Unfortunately, it's as politics goes, there's been people who have used the farm program as a political tool and a club at times. And that, and along with the problems in the deflating currency, or the inflating currency, and our failing dollar, has just exacerbated the problem. Of course, also the world's outproducing us in a lot of ways. They got more wealth than we do, and we're borrowing from them, so that just adds to the problem.
And, of course, we used to be the wealthiest country in the world, but thanks to our policies of our government, why we're progressively becoming less and less solvent. We're the biggest debtor nation in the world. 15 years ago, we were the greatest creditor nation in the world. Now we're the greatest debtor nation. We're having to borrow a couple of billion dollars every day just to pay our debts. And what are they doing? Why, they're spending more money. In fact, the incredible thing is they decided they're going to give away $160 billion. They sent everybody a check for $600. So they go out and spend it to stimulate the economy. And then, of course, they gave another $50 billion in credits one way or the other to business and corporations. And now, of course, all that stimulus is gone. They're just going to have to do something else, give away more money to try to keep the economy going. And I don't think you can keep the economy going by giving away money. It's sort of like trying to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. It really doesn't work.
Well, there's basically four or five things that's got to happen. First of all, we got to apologize to God for being stupid and beg His forgiveness. That's first and last. But we needed a public that actually understands what's going on, and we need to address this thing stepwise, systematically, and slowly, or we'll wind up with chaos. So, we don't suddenly need to scuttle everything and throw out the baby with the bathwater. We need an informed populace willing to take stepwise measures and stick to a plan to fix this.
Hey, I agree with you 100%. Joe, do you have anything else to say before we let you go?
No, that is it. Thank you so much.
God bless. Thanks very much for calling, Joe. We've got Sam calling from Cincinnati, and we'll get to Sam here in just a moment as we begin to analyze the plight of the American farmer. And, of course, the difficulty is the American farmer going to be able to continue to function as the value of our dollar falls, and it's going to continue falling as long as we have these turkeys in Congress giving away money. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Sam from Cincinnati, and of course our major guest is Daniel Harms from Southern Illinois. But our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. We're talking about the problems that face our farmers today. Hi, Sam. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. How are you?
Doing just fine, thanks.
I have a question for your guest. Let's say, just for protection, or maybe just if you wanted to make your own homemade bread, what would you suggest as far as like purchasing wheat and the way you would store it and so forth?
First, I suggest you get on the internet. Correct anything I say is wrong, but you can. There's basically two kinds of wheat. There's hard red. There's hard winter wheat, soft wheat. I think the hard wheat's a little better at bread. If you use the soft wheat, you need to add some gluten, but there's plenty of ladies, I bet, who know how to use bread machines, and there's suppliers that will wholesale you wheat.
Okay, and
and if you want to know how to make it, of course, we have a wonderful book. It's called Making the Best of Basics, and it's basically taking it back to the way it was, 50 or 60 years ago, when your grandparents were making their own bread. It's called Making the Best of Basics, not that expensive. My wife swears by the book, so it's got to be good.
So what if you knew a farmer, but you wanted to make sure you had the right moisture content, and what would be the proper way to store it and all that? Like, say, if you bought a couple bushels.
Any farmer that's able to sell to an elevator can store it, and will have it at the right moisture content. You want it to be about, 13.5%. 12 is not too dry. You need to. It's really hard to keep bugs out of it. Even in tin cans, it's hard to keep bugs out of it. So the deal is to not get too much at a time and have a steady supply. But if you can seal it and keep it dry, you can hold it for several months.
Well, now, what about, of course, long-term storage? And, of course, we had some work. We worked actually with a Mormon cannery, and they actually put these oxygen packets into the cans to take out the oxygen so that the bugs will, won't be able to multiply. Is that a good idea?
You probably know a lot more about that than I do, Dr. Stan. I just grow it.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to ask there, Sam?
Thank you very much.
All right. God bless. And, of course, that was Sam calling from Cincinnati. We're just talking about the plight of the farmer today. And do you grow your own meat at all? Do you have your own a few head of cattle?
Yeah, we have a small beef cow herd, and we have a local processing plant. So when we want to, we can butcher a cow. Often we butcher two or three at a time and share it with friends and family, buy halves and quarters and split it up that way.
Okay, hold the line. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening, of course, is Daniel Harms. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Daniel went back to farm in the 1970s after he finished college. And is farming a pretty good way of life?
Yes, sir. I'm privileged to be able to live this way. When I walk out my back door, I'm at work. I don't have a commute. My son can work with me. Matter of fact, when he was growing up, I said, if you want to spend time with your dad, you're going to have to work with your dad. So he's been raised on a farm, and he does a lot of our tractor driving for us now. Even though he's planning on going to college soon, he chose a college close to home so he can still help now and then. And it's quiet. I can go out in the country sometimes and drive 15, 20 minutes and never meet another car if I get on the back roads.
Well, now, what about crop insurance? Does the government provide crop insurance? And what about the subsidies they give to the farmers? How do these things work?
First of all, it's become almost essential to have all-risk crop insurance with the risk and the dollars involved. And even with government subsidies, it runs $20 to $35 an acre, depending on the level of insurance you pick.
So when you're talking about 1,000 acres, you're talking about $23,000.
That's correct.
All right, fine. Now, what about subsidies? Does the government subsidize it? Are the government still paying some farmers not to farm their land?
You're probably referring to what's called the Conservation Reserve Program.
Right.
It's some of the poorer, more erosive soils. They are talking about releasing some of those acres. They already do release some now and then for pasturing or hay on dry years. Those acres aren't going to make a huge difference in the amount of grain that's produced, even if they bring them back in. The better acres are what's already in production, have been kept in production.
All right. What about swine subsidies? How does that work?
Well, the farm program was just renewed, and I haven't had a chance to look at or read the articles about what the new one looks like. They have been paying farmers, even through these good times, subsidies, because the old program had what they called direct and counter-cyclical payments. And they were designed to offset these highs and lows we've been seeing in the market. They didn't anticipate $5 and $7 corn. So I'm not sure what they wound up with in this new bill. I just can't answer that one.
Well, now, of course, we've heard quite a bit about the effect of the floods and the droughts, certainly in the flooded areas, why they were going to have some difficulty getting the crops in, or if the crops were already in. Of course, a lot of them had drowned. And then we hear that there's, you know, been some pretty severe droughts over in Colorado, pardon me, eastern Colorado, northern Texas. Are you aware of what's going on in those areas at all?
Oh, I hear things. The Northwest is dry, and there's still a lot of areas along these rivers, even in my area, that didn't go to corn, and they have some beans growing where they were able to get in. They're going to be late. This crop is a long way from in the bin, Dr. Stan.
Of course, that old adage, in knee-high by 4th of July, talking about the corn, that's an old cat. You want to get that corn in early so it'll be growing, so that it's pretty well fixed by July, so that by August, when the real heat comes, why, of course, the heat won't wipe out the crop. Is that right?
Well, that's an old adage. If it's not tasseled by the middle of July anymore, you can figure on some drying costs or maybe some dry weather that's going to hurt you. Late rains will sometimes save a bean crop, so you know they can struggle along through the summer. But if you get some late August, early September rains, beans can surprise you. But like I said, this crop is a long way from in the bin.
Well, why don't you to explain what you mean by that? What is it? Does it look like it's going to be a good crop? Is it a questionable crop? Or is it going to depend upon whether the rains come as you'd like them to?
It always depends on the rains. you can have a crop that looks great in our area, and 2 weeks later you'll be crying for rain. Now, up north where they have the better, deeper soils, I think they've had enough rain where they've got it in early that crop is going to be a good crop. But there's a lot of those areas that are still wet and have yellow spots. I've had friends tell me that's been up in that neighborhood that it don't look as good as usual.
Now, what do you mean by yellow spots?
It's just too wet, and the nitrogen is leached out, corn stunted.
All right, fine. So we're just going to have to wait and see, because we keep reading all these things in the papers about how, you know, well, the crop's going to be terrible, and then the next article, the crop's going to be better than we ever expected.
Well, you don't get paid for not writing anything.
All right. And so they're just writing something they really don't know.
I would like to add one more thing.
You go right ahead.
Before we run out of time, I don't want to forget this. We've been focusing on the farm situation. I really feel for anybody that's on a fixed income. You alluded to the people in the nursing homes, and if they got their minds, they know what's happened to their savings. It's been systematically stolen by this inflated dollar. You know, it doesn't matter what they saved, it's not going to be enough unless they had some assets that appreciated within, you know, held their value during this inflation. The second thing I want to mention, and this is my opinion, but I think you'll back me up on this, we can talk about how we're going to fix the Federal Reserve, and we can talk about getting better government, but unless we get some jobs back in this country, we won't create the wealth we need to do anything. We got to get the jobs back.
But, of course, we're not going to get them back because our leaders have no loyalty to America. Their loyalty to this globalist dream, and so they've taken down our tariffs, and, of course, they're flooding our country with cheap goods from other countries. Right now, of course, General Motors and Ford and Chrysler are trying to buy out their employees. They promised them all sorts of fancy wages and permanent benefits, and they're trying to buy them out so that they can actually, you know, get new employees in for maybe $14 an hour and no benefits at all, or limited benefits. But it's not going to work. It's not going to work because you've got people over in China and Malaysia and Thailand and in India who will go ahead and actually work, you know, for, you know, 20% of what our workers will work for. And they're going to have the jobs in the plants at General Motors and Ford and the Japanese manufacturers are putting in China and in Thailand and Malaysia. Our companies are building plants over there so they can build their cars over there. And they're not telling the American people that because our corporations have no loyalty to this country. They're international corporations. And they're building factories to compete with the workers in this country. And the only solution is to impoverish our people, to lower our living standards. And that's what it's really all about. In fact, people living there on the farms may be a lot better off than us people in the big cities.
Fortunately, we still have something that's exportable, and our land has appreciated. Well, actually, it's held its value against the inflating dollar. You mentioned the people working for less in those countries. That's true. I'm hoping that, you know, maybe there'll be some of the shift that takes place will encourage companies to come back because the dollar is so weak and it would be more attractive to stay here or move back. But, you know, a lot of those people, I don't know what I should say a lot. I know some of those people, particularly in North Korea, don't get paid anything. They're slave laborers. I just finished a book called The Eyes of a Tailless Animal by a woman who survived the North Korean slave labor camp for 6 years. And Dr. Stan, it is horrible. It is absolutely horrible what those people actually are worked to death doing.
But, of course, what people don't understand is that, who's keeping the North Koreans in power? Why, we are. I mean, we give them food, you know. Well, that's because there's starvation there. But the food doesn't go to the people. It goes to keep the corrupt government in power. We give them oil. It doesn't go to the people so that they, you know, will have heating oil in the winter. It goes to the elite. Certainly, and then, of course, we subsidize both Russia and China, who are also subsidizing North Korea. We're keeping that corrupt regime in power just exactly as we're keeping the regime in Burma in power today, but we can't tell the American people that. What's the biggest source of their income? Why, it's Chevron Oil Company. And when recently they suggested that Chevron should be forced to pull out, of course, why people there in the government said, oh, we couldn't do that, unjust. And well, that's because Condoleezza Rice used to be on the board of directors of Chevron Oil Company. They're all in bed together. And, of course, China, who we are subsidizing, is also backing the Burmese government, probably equally as ruthless as the North Korean government. And until the American people understand that it is American foreign aid that is keeping tyrants in power all around the world, tyrants who go along with their dream of a new world order, nothing is going to change, unfortunately, Daniel. The lot of the people in North Korea is a terrible one. Is the lot of the people in Zimbabwe, of course, where we're helping. We talk about sanctions against the Mugabe there in Zimbabwe, but, of course, why China and Russia just simply vetoed the idea within the last 2 weeks. And so how are we going to punish China? Well, we're going to send our athletes over to their Olympics. Our president has got to go over to honor the Chinese for keeping the ruthless government in power in Zimbabwe. That, along with the United Nations funding and food, which we're sending over to keep the elite in power as the people starve. One of these days, people are going to begin to realize where the real problem is, and it's not in North Korea, and it's not in Burma, and it's not in Zimbabwe. It's in Washington, D.C., in New York City, where these people plan the betrayal of the American people and the people of North Korea, of Zimbabwe, and certainly of Burma. Well, anyway, Daniel, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Daniel, if you want to know about farming, because he's on the front lines of this battle, and what's the attitude of the farmers that you talk to? Are they optimistic? Are they really concerned about the possibility that the dollar keeps falling and the price of your fertilizer and potash and phosphate goes up, that they're going to be in real trouble next year?
Farmers are in veritable optimists. They're enjoying this little blip where we've had some pretty decent incomes. That is the grain farmers. Farmers love produce. I mean, that's what they love to do is go out and drive tractors and grow things. They'll keep trying. Somebody's going to farm this ground, and even if they're farming it for somebody else, they like farming. So farmers have seen so many tough times. There's a particular attitude that psychologists have found when they try to study farmers that characterizes them. They just kind of grit and go on. And the only thing that ever shuts them down is usually they get plowed under. You know, like farmers don't die, they just get plowed under. Or, you know, they can't get a loan. You know, they lose the land, something like that.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen in your area. Anyway, let's go to Steve. Is it Steve calling from Connecticut?
Yeah.
Sir. Hi, Steve. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, sir. I wanted to find out more about farmers involving with commodities. Like, how does this thing work? In other words, when people invest in, like, corn, wheat futures, and so forth, in terms of whether it goes up or goes down and its relation to, you know, the farmers with their crop, is it that there's certain farmers on a actual, like, a contract with, speculators or what? I mean, how does that whole system work? Because you sound like you know a lot about, you mentioned about farming insurance and acres and stuff like that.
Okay. I sell a lot of my grain directly to the elevator. But I
the
can,
elevator? What yeah. is the elevator?
It's a terminal where they buy it from you and then they redistribute it. They might ship it overseas. They might ship it by rail to chicken farms in Georgia. But I also have the option of getting on the border trade and buying positions on the border trade through a broker.
Okay.
If you want to type in Chicago border trade on the Internet, you will get all kinds of little helps on how to invest, how to play the markets. I deal with a company called eFutures.
eFutures. Yes, I heard of eFutures. As a matter of fact, I spoke to somebody on it. Like right. eFutures.com?
That's it.
Oh, okay. All right.
I have a broker there. So if I want to sell on the border trade, instead of selling cash, I will call my broker and arrange, with margins in the premiums, of course, to take a position on a border trade. I can buy or sell. But if it goes up or down, it's my risk.
Right. All right, is there some contact number, if somebody wanted to like, talk with you, privately off air, is there some contact number?
Dr. Stan could give it to you off air after the program.
Okay, you give it to me off air.
Yeah, you go ahead and call back after the program. Daniel would do, Daniel would actually sell his crop before it's ever harvested, isn't that right? And then you would lock in a specific price.
Yeah, I can sell 2 years out if I want to.
All right, fine.
It's just a tremendous risk.
Sure it is, because he who sells what isn't his and has to give it back or go to prison, and that's the whole idea. And
it's just about as bad a risk if I sell cash forward to the elevator for harvest delivery, because if I can't deliver, I got to buy that contract back or buy the grain somewhere else and deliver it.
Okay. Anyway, fine. Let's go to Tammy's calling. Thanks very much for calling,
okay,
Steve.
Sure.
And of course, we'll... I'm sorry. Cut Steve off. If Steve wants to call back in again, he can talk to our producer and get that telephone number. Right now, let's go to Tammy, who's calling from Shenawick, Washington. Hi, Tammy. How are you?
Good. How are you, Dr. Stan?
Doing just fine. You're going to have to turn off your radio there, though. I can hear me in the background.
All right. I want to know why can't they switch to sugar beets or something else instead of corn now?
All right, fine. Why don't you switch to sugar beets instead of corn?
There's two main reasons. Usually the climate of a given area is only really suitable to a few varieties. I don't know if sugar beets would even grow in our neighborhood. The second problem is you've got to have a place to sell them. Several years back, we tried canola in this country. It grows, does fairly well. We don't really have the right equipment, and we didn't want to invest in specialized equipment. The second problem, the market for that's in Canada, so we had to find ways to get it to Canada, and that didn't work out very well either.
So basically, there's certain things that you're going to be able to make a certain amount on, corn, wheat, soybeans, things like that. He could actually grow llamas there, but, he's a corn farmer. He's a grain farmer.
Right. But, I mean, for the gas, why can't they switch it instead of the corn and do something different?
In Brazil, they use biomass. They grow sugar cane. They're using, I think, some kind of scrub brush you're trying to grow. It may actually win out over corn in this country if they pursue the ethanol thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that was my question.
Okay, fine. Thanks
all
very
right.
much for calling, Tammy. Tammy, and let's go to Jack, who's calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Thanks for taking my call. My question piggybacks on the previous caller there. I heard an interview with a Christian farmer by the name of David Bloom, who authored a book, Alcohol Can Be a Gas, and he described from his 550-page book how farmers said that sorghum yielded something like 1,250 gallons per acre. Maybe it was 12,500 gallons per acre. And you mentioned the mesquite.
Okay, well, let's get to, we're almost out of time. Let's get Daniel's response. What about growing a biomass of some sort and make your own alcohol?
Back in the 80s, a neighbor of mine got a little ethanol plant still. He was going to make his own fuel. He soon discovered that there's a large disadvantage if you can't do it with an economy of scale.
In other words, you got to have much bigger scale than that he was able to come up with.
And the technology these days to make it work and the specialized enzymes in these plants to make it work are just beyond the ability of even a larger farmer to handle. I did read somewhere that somebody is working on a micro kind of deal that would be an energy-producing thing. I can't even think of the name of it now, but you can stack these things, and you can have smaller units, but it's way out in the future.
Well, hold that thought. We'll be right back. Thanks very much for calling, Jack. All right. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest has been Daniel Harms. Daniel, we got about 3 minutes to go before it's a witching hour, and I have to let you go. But what thoughts would you like to leave with our listeners about the plight of the farmers today?
It's the same plight as everybody, Dr. Stan. We need a renewing of the mind. We need to get back to, this is going to sound like nothing but farming. If we don't petition God and get back to His book, His Reformation Bible, and get on our knees and ask His mercy, get right. You know, I sound like an old Baptist preacher, but that's what it's going to take, Dr. Stan. We can do all kinds of politics. We can find all kinds of technology. We can bring jobs home, but without His blessing, He that builds us the house buildeth in vain.
I think you're absolutely 150% right. Certainly, you won't get any argument here. The only thing that's going to save America is a great revival. I'm sort of hoping that as this whole house of cards we're living in begins to crumble, why people are going to begin looking for the source of all the problems we're in. And, of course, hopefully it will cause them to begin looking into what's going on and realizing there's a battle between good and evil, between God and Satan. And I hope they're going to actually get down on their knees and accept God, because if we don't have a revival in America, why, I think that the wonderful country we've lived in for so many years will simply become a remembrance of things past. Well, Daniel, I really appreciate you taking the time this evening to be with us, and I certainly could be very interested. And please keep me advised as to what's happening as far as the prices, as far as a lot of the farmers is concerned. And I hope that you and maybe even your son will be able to continue farming there certainly in southern Illinois for a good time to come.
Yeah, if he gets the farm, it'll be God's will. It's only by God's will I've hung on this long.
Right. Well, you've been hanging on for some 30 years, and hopefully you'll be able to hang on a good deal longer.
Well, we'll see how that miracle turns out.
Well, I think there's going to be very, very difficult times in the coming year. Probably in another 5 to 10 years, people think that everything's going to turn around here in a year or so, and I don't think so at all. I think that we've been up for a long period of time. This is not simply a little temporary blip in the economy. I think this is a profound reorientation of everything, and when we come out the other side, we're either going to be returned to a free society, or we'll be living in a brutal totalitarian dictatorship, and maybe one that we deserve because we've turned our back on God. Our guest has been Daniel Harms, and I really appreciate you being with us, Daniel. I know it's getting late back there, so I appreciate so much you being with us.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stan.
Good night, and God bless.
You too.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that was Daniel Harms, and I hope you enjoyed the program. Daniel certainly has been one of our supporters and subscribed to our newsletter for some time, and we've had an opportunity to talk in the past, and of course, he'd written me a recent letter. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope you enjoyed our program with Daniel, because, of course, the farmers all across America are really caught in the same bind that the rest of us are. And it's not the farmer that's driving up the cost. It's the destruction of the value of our currency. And that, of course, is being carried out intentionally by the people who are in charge. And, of course, why are they destroying the currency? Well, it's really a very, very simple thing. Right now, the real debt of the United States is between $50 and $60 trillion. Of course, we've recently had the federal government's going to take on the debt of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. That's another $5 trillion, but a trillion here, a trillion there. Pretty soon, you're talking real money. There is no way in the world that they're ever going to be able to pay off all the money that they have promised the people, their Medicare benefits, their Social Security benefits, the Medicare drug bill, and that was another, I think, $6 or $8 trillion unfunded, and of course, the massive debt we already have. There's no way to do it. The only way to do it is to destroy the value of the currency and start over again, and in the process, destroy the value of the pension system, the insurance system. Certainly, anybody who has government bonds or government or bank CDs or bank savings or anything mediated in dollars is simply going to be wiped out. When you understand that is the agenda, then everything going on makes sense. And, of course, as Alan Greenspan, who's one of the major architects of this, says in his book, The Age of Turbulence, and you've heard me say it before, quoting Lenin, Alan Greenspan wrote, there is no better way to destroy a nation than to botch the currency. And not one person in a million will understand what's going on, and I don't think most people do understand what is happening. And, of course, Daniel, our guest this evening, was saying that certainly his farmland is holding its value, referable to the inflation of the currency or certainly the loss of value of the currency. So the farmland is maintaining its currency, pardon me, maintaining its value in face of inflation. And you're going to have to be in fixed assets, and that is the only thing that's going to be of any value in the coming times. So we're moving into some very, very difficult times. If you've never heard my talk on the financial tsunami or seen the DVD, if you get that, you really need to get the syllabus that goes with it to understand what's happening economically. If you'd like, of course, to get our information on finance, we carry a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island. That's The Creature from Jekyll Island. We probably sell half a dozen of those sometimes on a weekend. We have it at an Amazon bookstore, and people all over the world are getting this because they want to understand what's happening with money. And we have a money that's based upon nothing but debt. And as debt dissolves, as the price of housing just simply falls, that's all debt. And, of course, then that means that the amount of money out there goes. In fact, if you got rid of all debt, you wouldn't have any money. It's an incredible phony system. They've tried similar systems in ancient Greece, in ancient Rome, in ancient Florence, in ancient Venice. They tried it at the time of the John Law in France in the early 1700s. And then, of course, we financed the Continental, or I should say the American Revolution, with fiat money. And then France tried it again in 1789. We have a wonderful little book called Fiat Money Inflation in France, which we strongly recommend. The information is there through Radio Liberty. So let me suggest my talk on the financial tsunami, the book The Creature from Jekyll Island, the book The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, the book The Fiat Money Inflation in France. And, of course, that's written by Andrew Dickinson White, who I believe is the dean of Cornell University. My pamphlet on the history of money and my pamphlet on the financial meltdown. And you'll know more than most college professors do about economics. And our advice to you is diversify, get into things that are not tied to money. And, of course, you may be able to ride out the coming financial tsunami. And then, of course, we hope that you go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, and you'll certainly look at our videos, look at our other video section, that you'll read our newsletters, that you'll listen to our radio programs, you'll get others to do the same. We're involved in the spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. So please pray for America and pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Again, our number 1-800-544-8927. And we'll be right back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and of course for this the next hour, they're going to be the views of Amy Philo. And Amy had sent me an email recently. Amy is certainly somebody who's been involved with taking Prozac in the past with terrible results as far as her own mind and health were concerned. And so she began to study this whole issue of Prozac and the SSRI. That's the serum serotonin reabsorption inhibitors. Serum serotonin reabsorption inhibitors, SSRI drugs. And what they do is to inhibit the reabsorption of serotonin. In other words, raise the levels of serotonin in the brain, and this is one of the major neurotransmitters. But many times this can have disastrous effects. In fact, it has been shown in large studies, first of all, that these really don't work much better than placebos, and except in a very, very small percentage of people. But even more than that, the use of serum serotonin reuptake inhibitors actually can lead to a suicidal and homicidal ideology, and a significant percent number of the people, maybe only a few percent, but, I mean, would you really want to have people with homicidal tendencies of running around in your schoolyard with your children? And unfortunately, so many of the people who are involved in the schools and college shootings have been on these types of medications. But even more than that, and I think the thing that is really concerning, Amy, is the fact that there is legislation pending in the United States Senate today that will mandate that the Prozac will be given to pregnant women. It's called the Mother's Bill. Amy, has that bill actually passed the House of Representatives?
Last October, and it's in the Senate, and Senator Reid, the majority leader, has placed it into an omnibus package that is scheduled for vote on Saturday. That's in 2 days.
All right, fine. Of course, the bill has been at least temporarily held up by Dr. Tom Coburn of Oklahoma. Senator Coburn is certainly one of the few shining lights we have in the United States Senate today.
Yes, and also I just wanted to state before we go any further that this is a bill that has never made it through the HELP committee of the Senate, where it's supposed to be approved before it can go to the floor. That Senator Reid is just going to bypass the normal procedure, and they're not allowing any amendments to the bill, and they're not going to allow debate.
Well, no, of course,
just ending the filibuster.
What we're talking about is serious damage to both the mother and the child. Why would anybody want to pass legislation that would mandate that mothers, a certain percentage of them, be given these medication that would hurt them and that would hurt their children?
Well, they're doing it under the guise of trying to help, and they're all acting so sweet and like, oh, we just want to help mothers who are depressed. And there's a website called postpartum.net, and that's where these mental health drug apologists just basically like talk on and on about how postpartum depression is a horrible disease, and if we pass the Mother's Act, then we're going to end suffering.
Because what we're going to do is give it to the women before they go into a postpartum depression. What sort of madness is that?
Exactly. They think they can actually prevent depression.
Are there actually any scientific studies to show that giving this type of medication to women who are pregnant will prevent postpartum depression?
I've actually looked at some of the studies that they've tried to do, and they don't seem to show any, obviously they're not effective, but they do try to study it to prove it, and then they...
But if they haven't proved it, then why are they going to use our pregnant women as guinea pigs, and our children, our next generation of children as guinea pigs, because they're going to get the medication when they're in their mother's utero.
Right, they're just using all the excuses about depression being so dangerous to the baby as an excuse, but really, I mean, they...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here.
Okay.
Well, Amy, why don't you explain to us what the bill involves, and we'll go from there.
Okay. The Mothers Act is basically a nationwide screening bill. They want to push the disease concept on the public. They're going to do public awareness commercials about depression and try to get women to think they're mentally ill. And then once they're screened, of course, they're going to be diagnosed as depressed, because what new mother doesn't have some of those symptoms in the first year of her baby's life or even while she's pregnant? They're probably going to do this screening like over and over until they can finally catch you and then put you on drugs, of course, because it would be considered unethical to let you go without drugs.
Well, now, are they giving it to the women when they're pregnant or after they've delivered?
Well, it'll be both. It'll depend on the doctor, probably, and how bad the woman's risk for depression is considered to be. But, like, if you've had a previous episode of postpartum depression, you're probably either already going to be on the drugs, or else they're going to say, well, if you go on this now, you can prevent getting it. Or sometimes they'll wait until, like, the day the baby's born and put the mother on the drugs as soon as the baby comes out.
What do you mean, but know whether she's going to be depressed or not?
Right, because they expect you to get depressed. In fact, when I was taking Zoloft after my baby almost died and I was anxious, so they put me on Zoloft to prevent postpartum depression. I was told, like, well, first of all, I became psychotic and homicidal and suicidal on Zoloft. And they told me that because of that, I was just severely depressed with psychotic features. And if I ever had another child, I had a 90% chance of having postpartum depression and that it was probably going to get worse. So they try to scare you not to have more children. And then if you do happen to get pregnant, they're like, well, you're going to get it again, so you better start this drug from day one.
And, of course, how long were you actually on the drug?
I was on it for 5 months.
I see. And you actually were getting a suicidal and homicidal ideas in your mind?
Yes. After only 3 days, I began hallucinating. And I hallucinated murdering my son by throwing him down the stairs. And then from there, it just got worse. I wasn't hallucinating the whole time, but I had intrusive thoughts of murdering him all day. Every day.
Of actually murdering your child.
Yes. And it got worse to the point where, like, the higher dose of Zoloft that I took, thoughts expanded from murdering my son to murdering my family, including my husband and my mother and my two cats. And then even my neighbors.
As soon as
I stopped taking it, I was no longer suicidal or homicidal, and I didn't feel like I was about to go crazy. So.
How often does this actually happen? Hold on, Tom. We'll be back in just a moment here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our producer mentioned selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. That's selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. That's the official name of the drugs. And, of course, Amy was placed on these when she was postpartum, and actually, of course, she began to get homicidal and suicidal ideologies. She wanted to kill her children. And so what was the solution? Why, they gave her more drugs, and then more drugs, and more drugs. And then she was thinking of killing her husband and killing her neighbors and killing her animals. And it wasn't until she got off of the medication that she stopped wanting to kill her child and kill her husband. And, of course, at that time she realized, of course, that this was a problem. And what most doctors, and I'm not criticizing doctors, haven't I? I've lived with them for years. I love them. But they do not understand that the drugs actually produce suicidal and homicidal tendencies. What percentage of people do you think actually get these suicidal and homicidal tendencies?
Well, I don't think we know exactly the answer to that, but I think it's at least 4% of patients who are taking the drugs, but it's probably much higher than that. If you look at the research on serotonin, when you raise serotonin, you produce all sorts of horrible effects, mania, psychosis, homicidal urges, just bizarre behavior. So there's really, it's like a ticking time bomb if you're taking one of these drugs.
All right, of course, we remember the woman who actually drowned all five of her children. And she didn't know why she did it. She was just drowned her children. And of course, she ended up, they were going to try her for murder. And eventually, I think she's been placed in a psychiatric hospital. And she's probably fine now that she's off these drugs. And yet, this is never brought out in any of the trials. And I was surprised they did not use this in her defense, that these drugs that she was being given actually bring about homicidal tendencies. What's ever happened to that poor lady?
Well, I believe Andrea Yates actually is probably still being fed a lot of drugs. I mean, I'm not positive about that, but it seems like in the psychiatric hospital, you can't really be there without being given a cocktail of drugs. So she's still in the psychiatric hospital, and they put her there instead of prison. And her attorney is actually working with the same group trying to pass the Mothers Act. He's on their board.
Her attorney is trying to get this legislation through.
Right.
Doesn't he realize, of course, this is probably what stimulated and caused the death of those children?
I don't know what his problem is, but he's also publicly stated that fathers should be prosecuted if their wife kills the child, because the father should have known to get the mother into psychiatric treatment.
Well, because they did have Andrea Yates under psychiatric treatment, and they were giving the pills when she killed her kids.
Yeah, and this is a comment. His name's George Parnum. He made this comment on a case that's in Mansfield, Texas, where it's pretty close to where I live. And this guy named Michael Maxon, his wife had drowned their one-year-old while she was taking Zoloft. So she got off on an insanity plea, so she's stuck in a psych ward, too, and now they're prosecuting the father, saying that he encouraged her to kill the son. And George Parnum said, well, he should have gotten her into some stronger therapy, stronger drug treatment.
Well, it sounds to me, of course, what they're doing is fighting fire with gasoline. Of course, postpartum depression is not an unusual phenomenon, although certainly there are lots of things as far as taking lots of vitamins and minerals. And, of course, the woman's body is being depleted of all of these things. If you treat her, what remedies are there for postpartum depression that do not involve taking these drugs that produce homicidal and suicidal tendencies?
Well, starting with the diet and the nutrition, you want to eat like plenty of food. And when you're postpartum, you're bleeding literally, so you have to keep your food intake going up. And I think that a lot of women just try to not eat after they have a baby because they're worried that they're fat. And so they need to have more people around them, like bringing them food and just like telling them to stay in bed and not get up and run around, because if you're up like moving around too much, you'll bleed more. That'll make you weaker. And then also, like, if you just think about it, I mean, the normal process of a woman giving birth the way we have for millions of years has totally been changed. And so now we're in this like highly complicated medical situation that's not very natural, and it doesn't feel right. And, I mean, women feel robbed sometimes. So I think a natural childbirth would be a great step that would reduce the drug load on the body and the baby and make everything go smoother. So those would be two great starts.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the legislation they're trying to get passed. What is it going to do? Is it going to mandate that doctors be required, of course, to give these women tests or to give them the medication? And what percentage of women would be given? What percent of pregnant women would be given these drugs, these very dangerous drugs?
Well, the people pushing for it have been very hypocritical. And in some instances, they're saying that it's mandatory, it's universal screening. But then when they come up against opposition, they try to say, well, it doesn't say mandatory in the bill. So it's kind of questionable what's really going to happen.
But what they're going to do, of course, is put the doctor, into a defensive position. If he doesn't do the screening and give the medication, then he's not practicing according to the general medical practice, and he could lose his license or he could be sued.
Right.
And if he does give her the medication, why, she may kill her children or may kill her husband, but then it'll be all right because it was what everybody else is doing. That doesn't seem very logical.
I know. It's really scary. And one-third of America's pregnant women are already taking psychiatric drugs.
One-third of pregnant women are taking psychiatric drugs?
Yes, this is according to the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and it just came out this April.
Now, are they giving these SSRI drugs?
Oh, yeah. And I have a bunch of tables that I've looked at from the Food and Drug Administration adverse event reports. There were at least, there's an estimated 2,900 babies who died from spontaneous abortion from SSRIs from 2004 to 2007.
In other words, basically you take these drugs, but it increases the incidence of miscarriage. Is that right?
Right. And stillbirth.
But aren't they worried about the unborn child being killed by the drugs?
Actually, I don't think they could care any less than they do about that. And the abortion groups were actually pushing for this bill, too. So it's very scary that we have all these, like, blatant, like, just frightening groups behind this, and the consequences are pretty obvious, and nobody seems to notice. It's like, oh, no, that's no big deal. We're just trying to help women.
No, because I really don't think they're trying to help women. I believe it versus a profit motive, and then I think there are other motives as well that certainly would not be even as noble as the profit motive. Now, who is the major driving force behind the mother's bill, which is going to suggest, is they going to suggest, are they going to recommend, are they going to mandate? What does the legislation actually say?
It says that they're going to promote education and promote earlier diagnosis and treatment.
No, but who is going to promote it?
Huh?
Who is going to promote the early...
the taxpayers are going to pay for some public service announcements, and then groups like Postpartum Support International will receive federal grants to go around in every single state and make sure that midwives and doctors are following through with the Mother's Act.
But then what is the doctor or the midwife supposed to do as far as the Mother's Act is concerned?
The House version says that they're supposed to administer this test called the Edinburgh Postnatal Depression Scale.
In other words, they're supposed to give psychological tests to the mothers?
Right. Psychological screenings, find out if they are depressed or if they're considered at risk of depression.
Certainly the test, you know, could come up with any conclusions they want to. In other words, you can put this thing into wording that you could make every woman depressed.
Right. And also, let's pretend I became pregnant and my midwife decided to give me this test and I said, no, thank you. Just declining a psychological screening could be interpreted as a sign of a mental illness. If you're refusing it, there's a diagnosis called noncompliance with...
Oh, my goodness, noncompliance. That means you're probably an independent thinker. You really need to be on psychiatric medication.
Right.
That's madness.
That would be a good reason to give me some Zyprexa, because I would be considered delusional and paranoid.
Did you ever have any subsequent children after the one child you had?
Yes, I have two sons, and the second child I had was born in my home, and I haven't had any problems after he was born.
You had what?
I haven't had any psychological problems.
You didn't have any psychological problems. You didn't go into depression the next time, huh?
Nope.
Why did you go into depression the first time?
Well, I was never really depressed in the first place. My son was... born in a hospital, and the nurses told me to feed him formula, and I didn't want to. So then as soon as we took him home, they called, and they were like, hey, you need to come back and get him checked for jaundice. So when I went back to the hospital, they said, well, he's not jaundiced, but you might want to give him this formula. Just give him this one bottle until your milk comes in. So I did, and then he threw it up, and then he started turning blue while he was sleeping that night, and I was really worried, so I called 911. The paramedics came out, and they said take him to the hospital, and as soon as we got there, he started to throw up again, but he choked, and he almost choked to death.
Was this a result of the formula that you were giving him?
Yes, I gave him some formula. He couldn't digest it, and also I believe that the drugs that he was coping with from the medications I had taken during childbirth and afterwards, like the pain medications, I think those sort of affected his esophagus.
Uh-huh.
And it caused him to choke, so they gave me the drugs for anxiety, not depression.
And because that was a medication that caused you to become suicidal and homicidal, huh?
Right.
And then, of course, as you begin to get worse and worse, they gave you more and more medication, and then you get worse, and you get more medication, and of course, you... thank goodness you did not kill anybody or kill your child or kill your husband or your neighbors or your animals. And people have to understand these are dangerous drugs. And they want to give them to as many women as they can. You have to ask yourself, why would anybody want to do something that illogical? Or is it possible? Is it just possible there's another agenda? We'll be back in just a moment here with Amy Philo. And if you have a call, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Amy, go right ahead. So anyway, basically, then you had your second child, no difficulty at all, and the children are doing well?
Oh, yes, they're both wonderful. Isaac, my first child, he just turned 4, and then I have another son, Toby, who is almost 2 years old.
All right, fine. Of course, I think it's wonderful that you have the children, and hope maybe you'll even have some more. I think it's a great, I think children are the greatest investment in the world. But anyway, let's get back to the discussion of the Mothers Act. Now, was there any discussion of any of the things we're talking about when this was brought up in the House of Representatives?
Actually, they passed this in the House without debate. The House of Representatives.
Wait a minute, how can they do that without debate? Don't they have to have a debate and discussion so that the congressmen will know what they're voting on?
Well, they didn't have it. They just, I can't remember what the term was called that they used, but they just moved to close debate on it, and then they passed it by a two-thirds majority.
Who's the big force behind it? Is it the drug companies that are going to make billions of dollars on this?
The drug companies have been sponsoring just about every group that endorses the bill. And they have a lot of money in these groups like NAMI and the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance. And Postpartum Support International has some high-ranking members that work for pharmaceutical companies.
But doesn't it, certainly is there any way to hold the drug companies responsible, the pharmaceutical companies responsible for, you know, if a child is murdered or if somebody is murdered because they're on these drugs?
Well, I do have some friends who are suing the drug companies for having lost someone, or like my friend Julie Edgington, her son Manny has a transposition of the great arteries that he was born with, and she's suing GlaxoSmithKline because she was on Paxil.
Now, is there definite a relationship between, of course, the SSRI drugs and, of course, these cardiac abnormalities?
Yes, there's a definite relationship. The heart defects and the birth defects are even higher than the spontaneous abortions and stillbirths. And you can even get, like, a 6 times higher rate of a lung disorder that can kill the baby.
Well, and I hope she has a good lawyer, not one that says, so often you get a lawyer who's actually working for the drug companies who will sell you out. Does she have an honest lawyer?
She has a good lawyer. What? Yeah. She has one of the best that does the drug cases.
All right, fine. Is this some sort of a firm that's used to doing this sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. I think she's using Baum Hedlund. I don't know if you've heard of them.
No, I really don't, but I'm just glad they got a good lawyer. It's a shame that we got to go to the lawyers to get things straightened out, but we can't depend upon the American Medical Association. We can't depend upon doctors' organizations who ought to be leading this charge, but, of course, they've been infiltrated and bought off by the drug companies. Unfortunately, there we have some of the finest physicians working within organized medicine that money could buy, and I know because I was part of organized medicine for a long time until I became so disgusted with them that I quit my position in the House of Delegates and the California Medical Association, and then, of course, I went on to talk radio to try to expose the corruption that exists there. Well, certainly, there are other injuries as far as the children is concerned, besides the cardiac abnormalities when the mother is taking these terrible medications?
Yes. Well, there's PPHN, it's persistent pulmonary hypertension. That's just basically where the lungs don't work very well, and at least 20% of newborns who have it die. And then
how prevalent is this? Do we have any idea?
I have some charts that I can get some data to show you.
But because basically, of course, there's statistics, there's scientific studies and all of these things, but the members of Congress and Senate have no idea what's going on. We're going to be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Amy Philo. Of course, she's one of the real leaders in this whole effort to expose the corruption that's going on. And, of course, members of Congress didn't even debate the bill. They passed it overwhelmingly. Do we have any idea what the vote was in the House of Representatives?
Yes, it was a two-thirds majority. There were 3 no votes and 46 people not voting.
Boy,
that's 383 yeses.
That is really, of course, a reflection on, of course, the corruption that exists in Congress, why we should vote almost all of those congressmen out of office.
Well, absolutely.
Basically, of course, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Right now we've got Sylvia calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Sylvia. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thank you.
Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I have a comment. I'm listening avidly to your speaker, and I am myself a doctor of chiropractic, and I'm certified in nutrition, and I wanted to support this cause here. And I wanted to let you to know, and anybody who's listening, that oftentimes postpartum depression is a result of weak adrenal glands, and they can be supported and nurtured back to health again with nutrition, using certain glandular supports, and you'd want to consult with someone who deals with this kind of thing. But there's certain brands out there that I could recommend. I don't know if I'm allowed to do that over the air or anything, but basically when the fetus is in the uterus and the woman is pregnant, if she's had weak adrenals from long-term stress or other reasons prior to getting pregnant, then she usually feels great because the baby's adrenals are helping her have those cortisol hormones and have a normal kind of hormonal balance. And then when the baby is born, she no longer has those baby's adrenal glands supporting her. And she crashes, has an adrenal crash, and doesn't have the normal hormonal balance that a normal person would with strong adrenals.
Uh-oh.
So this is a sign that she needs to get her adrenals up and running.
Okay, fine. Well, I appreciate your calling, Sylvia, and thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye-bye. Bye. Okay, fine. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I really don't know anything at all about adrenal concepts. Have you ever heard anything like that, Amy?
Yeah, I've heard that from a few people. And I also know that omega-3 is really important, and a lot of people don't take it, but it's been shown really beneficial for depression.
In fact, that's omega-3 fish oil. There's so many things out there in the way. Really, you need, of course, supplemental minerals. You need supplemental vitamins and of course, the fish oil. I'm sure there are things that can be done besides these terrible drugs, but, of course,
right.
The average doctor has no idea of this because he is not allowed to know. They control what's in his magazines. They control what's said at the meetings. They control what's put out by his professional organizations, and as a result, sometimes we find people, whether they be chiropractors or just people and parents who know a lot more about these issues than the average physician does. We see this as far as vaccinations. Physicians will tell you vaccinations are safe and effective, and they are not safe. They are not effective in many instances. Certainly, they may cut back on the incidence of disease, but, of course, the incidence of many of the diseases, diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, measles, were falling dramatically, and even polio falling dramatically before the vaccine started. But the complications that come from the use of the vaccines far outweigh the value and the deaths that are saved from these diseases, and yet the average physician has never heard the other side. Well, anyway, of course, the same thing holds true as far as these SSRI drugs. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like, of course, to give us a call. But I'm really firmly convinced that there are lots of excellent treatments out there, and certainly I'm sure they're up there on the Internet. Is there a good place where people could go, Amy, to get ideas on the treatment of postpartum depression or ways to head off postpartum depression?
I would recommend if you go to wellnessresources.com.
Wellnessresources.com, okay.
That's a website from a friend of mine. I think you've had him on your show, Byron Richards.
Right, sure.
And he has a couple of articles on the importance of prenatal and postpartum nutrition, and he goes into the very specific nutrients that a lot of women need that they're not getting. And those are two really good articles, and I have those on my website, too. I have a new website, actually, that I just launched called momsandmeds.com that has that link on there.
Well, why don't you give that name again?
Momsandmeds.com.
Momsandmeds.com. And, of course, that's www.momsandmeds.com. Do you have another website? Where?
Yes. Uniteforlife.org.
Unite?
UNITEFOR. LIFE.org.
I suspect maybe if you just went up on the Internet and Googled in Amy Philo, you'd come up with these, wouldn't you?
Well, you'd see a few other things because I do a lot of other websites too, but yeah, they'll come up if you Google my name, and P-H-I-L-O. is my last name, like a philosopher, Philo.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a moment with Amy here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest is Amy Fowler. We're talking about the Mother's Bill and everybody, the things that are happening. Our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And if you have a question on this subject, and I think this is a very important subject because of this legislation, when is it going to be voted on, Amy?
In 2 days, on Saturday. They're going to vote on it before they go on a summer break.
I see. Well, how does Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein, our two United States senators from the state of California, stand on this subject?
I would assume that both of them would probably go with Senator Reid on this.
And of course, are they getting a lot of money from the drug companies that produce these things? Or do they get donations?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I've tried to look and see, like, who gets the most money from pharma. And this year it's Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, of course, because they're running for president. But, I mean, it was so mind-boggling when I started looking that it was just never-ending. So I don't even remember. I mean, everyone seems to be taking pharma money, except for a couple of people. Like, I don't think Tom Coburn really took any. So that was good.
Well, of course, Tom Coburn is an obstetrician himself, as I remember. He certainly is a physician from Oklahoma who was in the House of Representatives for 6 years, promised he, when he got through the 6 years, he'd go back home, and that's exactly what he did. And then, of course, he was asked by others to run for Senate, and it was sure a long shot, but he got into the United States Senate. Let me tell you, Tom's doing a great job back there, and I'm, you know, just proud that we've got a physician back there who's trying to do the right thing. Is he going to be able to prevent this legislation from being acted on Saturday? I mean, aren't there tricks that they can use to block it?
Well, he has a hold on it. Basically, he's been filibustering a bunch of these bills. And what Senator Reid has to do is move to invoke cloture, which means they're going to end the filibuster, and they have to have 60 votes to do that. So what we need to do is have everybody call their senators and ask them to vote no on the cloture motion on the Reid Omnibus package.
The Reid Omnibus package, did they call it the Mother's Bill, or what do they call it there?
The Mother's Bill is in there. It's slipped in at the last minute, Section D. The bill itself is called the Advancing America's Priorities Act, and it's known as, unofficially, it's being joked about being called the Coburn Omnibus Bill.
The Coburn Omnibus Bill. Why would they call it the Coburn Bill when he's opposing it?
They're just trying to slam Tom Coburn because he's been holding up their legislation. And if you go to his website, coburn.senate.gov, there's some really interesting things on there. Like, it's kind of funny, actually, if you look at the first page.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Amy Philo. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Amy Philo, and of course, we're talking about the Mother's Act that you're going to try to get this through on Saturday. And of course, they're putting it in something called the Omnibus Act. They want to get this passed. They do not want any debate on it. They do not want, of course, either the senators or the public to know. They're planning on poisoning our children. They're planning on poisoning the mothers. And of course, there's no question. Dr. Coburn, who's a physician, is trying to block this, but they've actually, almost like an inside joke, named the Omnibus Bill the Coburn, for Tom Coburn, the Coburn Omnibus Bill, even though he's opposing this part of it that involves, of course, the Mother's Act, which is going to mandate that physicians begin testing and then prescribing medication for a woman who might become depressed after she has her child. Well, certainly, Amy, before we go on, I want you to get out your websites. You mentioned two of them. Our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to give us a call, if you have a question or comment, or maybe somebody out there knows something more about this adrenal treatment for postpartum depression. I'm not acquainted with it, and it may be a great deal to it. I'd like to learn from those of you who are out there, or if you know a website. But if you have a question or comment for Amy, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or Amy, I want to go ahead and give those the two websites that you mentioned that you thought were so good.
I have, well, my two websites are uniteforlife.org, uniteforlife.org, and also a new one is called momsandmeds.com.
All right, fine. Of course, you were just saying you want every one of our listeners to call their United States senator and any senator that they think they get through to and tell them to vote against the omnibus bill because, of course, we had 41 votes why they couldn't get it through. Is that right?
Well, we need 40. We need at least 40 senators to vote no on cloture because if we, I think there's a real danger that it could pass, like, without any debate. And so if they vote no on cloture, then they can't pass it at least without debating the individual bills.
And the last thing they want is to debate it and have the truth come out. Why might even get the media that the big pharma was paying literally tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to get this legislation through to harm our children and to harm our mothers. It's certainly, they pass this over so concerned about, what's going on, And, of course, there's always the law of unintended consequences, and there's no problem facing American medicine today that a new government program will not complicate and make worse. And, of course, there's an excellent chance that this legislation will go through. I don't know. Now, how much money is this going to cost? Is the government going to subsidize these medications we're going to use to poison the mothers and children?
Yes, they plan to pay for services for women who don't have insurance, and then they'll pay, like, above and beyond your copay. Like, if, let's say that you only have, like, an 80% coverage, they'll probably be giving you your 20% back. And then they want to do studies on abortion, depression. They're going to pay for all sorts of studies and public service announcements at taxpayers' expense. And the entire omnibus package that we're opposing is actually an $11.3 billion package.
Where's the money coming from?
They're just going to expand the government. They're not trying to do anything to balance the budget.
But they got to have the money. The money's got to come from someplace.
I guess they'll be just printing more money.
Just creating the money out of nothing and, of course, destroying the value of our currency. And that's what these people do. And they ought to be tried for treason because they are, of course, the enemies of America. And they're sitting there in the United States Senate. And they're sitting there in the House of Representatives voting for issues that are unconstitutional. And yet they've sworn before God that they'll uphold the Constitution, and most of them don't even understand what the Constitution says. Well, again, our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and we've got Joe calling from Michigan. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
Are you the Joe who called earlier?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Do you have a question or comment?
Actually, I have a comment. I was just wondering if you guys had ever heard, in China, the woman actually, after they give birth, they take the placenta and they make what's called placenta soup, and they have extremely low incidence of postpartum syndrome.
I never heard that. Have you ever heard anything like that, Amy?
I've heard of eating the placenta, and actually I even considered doing it and got all the way to the point where I was trying to put my placenta into little pills, but I had it all baked and everything, and I was supposed to grind it up, and it broke my grinder, and I just said, this is useless anyway. So.
All right, but I guess there's some truth in that, Joe.
And it's filled with nutrition. God made it that way.
All right, I think you're absolutely right. I've actually seen information on that as well. But here in the United States, of course, we're much smarter. We'd rather give the women the SSRI pills. Anything else, Joe?
That's it.
God bless. Thanks very much, and appreciate your calling. And what part of, well, I guess Joe's gone. Let's go to Jack, who's calling from Michigan. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But remember, ladies and gentlemen, we've only got one day for you to call your senator, your senator or any other senator that you think, or call your friends and tell them to call their senators and say vote no on the omnibus bill that's going to be voted on Saturday. And again, they call it, the Coburn Omnibus Bill?
That's the nickname, but it's actually, just when you call, you could either say the Coburn Omnibus or the Reid Omnibus Package.
Okay, fine. Of course, Harry Reid is a very corrupt individual, and he, of course, wants to get this legislation through. He's probably going to get all sorts of wonderful benefits from the pharmaceutical companies because this is going to give them billions of dollars, but even more than that, it's going to harm an awful lot of women and an awful lot of children. And I just hope that the lawyers can win their cases against these companies because we'd be far better off without them. Let's go to Jack calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. This harkens back to the Clintonista
regime when he or it was fond of stating that it's the economy, stupid. So as I see what's going on, it's always the economy. It's the economy of the big-time corporations that have transformed the republic into a fascist police state. And what I was really calling about, before I forget, I think Anne Blake Tracy said that SSRIs are essentially LSD. But
I think that she says it probably works through a lot of the same pharmacological channels, or the same channels in the brain. Okay,
yeah.
Anything else, Jack?
Well, I was just wondering, as a recommendation for the audience, if they have access to any local talk radio shows tomorrow, they should call, which I'll be doing in the morning, a local radio station, and giving out this information. And then throughout the day, there are nationally syndicated talk radio shows people can call. And I'm familiar with one, this Dennis Miller fella is out of New York City, and he has a primetime show at 10 o'clock Eastern time that I think goes 3 hours.
All right, Joe, Jack, I hope you'll go ahead and get the call into him and get the information out. And of course, we've got a great 4-tape set on the Prozac drugs, including an interview with Amy Philo and certainly one with Byron Richards and Blake Tracy. And we think this information is so vitally important. Anything else you want to say before we let you go?
Yeah, real quick, Dr. Stan, I would like to ask her if she or anyone has informed her as to how much taxpayer funding in this particular case for these types of drugs and their promotion has occurred. Any idea?
Well, you're talking about how much will occur when the bill gets through?
There must be, for all these drugs, there must be taxpayer funding, like subsidies through the government. I'm just curious if anyone has compiled any data on how much taxpayer subsidy occurs for these SSRIs.
Okay, have any thoughts on that, Amy?
Yes, there are some charts that we have on Medicaid expenditures. We've spent billions on drugging our children through Medicaid. And also in this bill, in the House and the original Senate version, they plan to do studies to develop new medications at taxpayer expense. We already have shelves medications like there's a derivative of Prozac that Eli Lilly made that's safer, and they spent all this money making it and decided they didn't want to market it because it's too safe.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much, Zach. And they're talking about another $11 billion to get this bill through. And that'll probably be per year. Maybe it'll be per month. Who knows? Anyway, God bless. Bye-bye. And let's go to Lorene calling from Litchfield, New York. Hi, Litchfield. How are you doing, Lorene?
Good. How are you?
Fine.
I was wondering if the lady who called, the chiropractor who called to tell us about the adrenal glands, whether, if she's still listening, if she could call back and give us a website that women can, or husbands or whoever can contact.
All right, fine. If she's out there listening, I think her name was Sylvia, if I'm not mistaken, but if she's out there, why, please give us a call and give us a website.
I didn't know, too, if it could be connected with this lady that's on your show now with her website so people can get help.
Right. Basically, of course, Amy was saying that Byron Richards, we've had Byron on not infrequently, and of course, he has websites that talk about the nutritional supplements that you can take prevent postpartum depression. And what if Sylvia's out there and she has a website on the adrenal aspect, why, give us a call. We'll always love to get that. So anything else you wanted to say, Lorene?
No, I just appreciate what you're doing and the light that you shed on many things.
Well, because you are back there in New York, it's getting awful late, isn't it?
I know.
We appreciate so much you staying up. And please try to get people to listen. You know, what we do because we're just trying to get people educated. I wish we had 10 times as many stations, but we're just fortunate to have as many as we have on this two-hour program in the evening.
I do wish that there were some stations around here. Like this station, you can't get in a lot of locations.
Right.
And so when I tell my friends about you, they can't get you.
Well, of course, they can get us on the Internet. They can get us on shortwave, at least the first hour of the program. They can get a little inexpensive satellite, listen to us 9 hours a day, and not get anything accomplished. But they're, inexpensive satellite, no monthly fees, and that's, of course, with Rick Satellite. Anybody wants to know about them, they can give us a call, and we have
How
no
do you
financial
get
interest.
Inexpensive satellite?
Beg pardon?
How do you get inexpensive satellite?
Well, basically, you call us off the air, and we'll give you the number for Rick Satellite. Rick, I think the price is $169, and maybe plus shipping, and they'll get you the receiver, they'll get you the dish.
Is that just radio?
What?
Is that just radio?
No, it's radio and television. It gives you about 50 radio stations and 50 or maybe 100 television stations. Now, a lot of these are in foreign languages, but a lot of them are in English, and some of our major...
How much is it?
It's about $169, and you get the dish and the receiver. It's a great deal because there's
that's
no cost
a year?
For it. What? No, that's it. That's that. You get it. You get it set up, and then you get to listen to us 9 hours a day. We actually have a feed up there, 9 hours a day. Well, you can listen to Joyce Riley, Butch Palm. That's just on our satellite, but there are all sorts of feeds up there. And it's really one of the best deals in the world. Give us a call. Do you have our 800 number?
I have your 8AAA number. That's another thing.
No, that's 1-800-544-8927.
Wait,
as you get 1-800-544-8927.
8927. And that's one thing. I had a really hard time getting your number because you speak it so quickly when you get towards the end.
I'm sorry. Well, I'll try to slow down a little bit.
Okay.
All right, fine. Well, that's Rick Satellite. And, oh, wait a minute. He does an excellent, excellent job. And, of course, he'll work with you till you got the thing up and working. And this is why we don't bother to sell them. I don't want to work with people telling them how to set up a satellite system. But you put the dish up on your port someplace, and he'll tell you how to aim it. And then you'll have crystal clear video. You'll have a crystal clear radio from Radio Liberty and all sorts of other ministries as well.
And does that replace cable TV?
Yeah, well, sure. But you're not going to get a lot of the, you're not going to get the really corrupt things that are going on.
Does it give you Sky Angel?
Well, it's different than Sky Angel, but this has a lot of Christian programming on it.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Okay.
God bless, and thanks very much.
Thank
that was
you,
Lorraine
God
calling, and 800-544-8927, if she wants to give us a call, and we'll give her that telephone number tomorrow. But it's a little late tonight. Good night, Lorraine.
Good night.
Good night. And, of course, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And with us is Amy Philo. And we're talking about the Mother's Bill. If you have a question or comment for Amy, she certainly understands what's going on. She's on the front lines of this battle. She's I think, there because she almost, of course, became a victim of these terrible drugs. And if you look at the control studies on the Prozac, you'll find out that there's very little difference. If you look at the placebo studies and the people who got it, maybe a 1% difference as far as results are concerned. But as far as the harm that these drugs do, it's immeasurable. But they do not want the American people to know. And the last thing they want is for the physicians to know, because, of course, these drugs do so much harm. Right now, of course, we've got Sylvia calling from Santa Cruz, and I guess maybe she's going to give us the website there. If she wants to come on the air, we'll be glad to talk to her. Anyway, of course, Amy, do you have any things, any other thoughts you'd like while we're trying to get that website from Sylvia?
Yeah, I do have an article about the adrenal stuff on my website on uniteforlife.org.
Okay, fine. And basically, Sylvia says it's standardprocess.com. www.standardprocess.com.
And then the other is
karuna.com. That's karuna.com. And then there's geyerherbs.com. That's geyerherbs.com and vital-u.com. So Sylvia's got a lot of information up there, and I appreciate so much for calling back to give that to us. Again, standardprocess.com. standardprocess.com, karuna.com, geyerherbs.com, vital-u.com, and type in the search word on Google just for adrenal postpartum depression. So thank you very much, Sylvia. I really appreciate you getting that. And of course, Amy says she has some articles on her website as well.
Yeah, a lot of people are talking about this adrenal stuff, and I just want to add that I'm kind of, I would look into it a little bit before you do it, because they do mention, like, something about your cortisol being, like, too low, and I know that cortisol is normally the stress hormone, and I was under the impression that meant that having a lot of cortisol is a bad thing. And I also
the stress hormone is really adrenaline.
Yeah, so I would be kind of, like, looking into that a little bit extra. And also, like, when you're breastfeeding, you don't want to have high cortisol because it will interfere with your letdown.
All right, fine.
Just look into it thoroughly before you...
I know nothing at all about it, so I'll be like, the unidentifiable source who declined to be quoted but said off the record that he had no comment. Well, our guest has been, of course, Amy Filo. We hope you have enjoyed the program and that you look into this and you'll start calling your senators tomorrow. This is a vitally important bill. First of all, we can't afford it, but it's going to harm our children. It's going to harm the children, and they know that. Why would anybody in their right mind do that? Because we're not dealing with people in the right mind. We're dealing with people, in many respects, who worship a different God. Well, Amy, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program, so say what you will, and I'll try to be quiet. That's
okay.
Hard for me to do, but go ahead.
I really hope that everyone can take some time tomorrow and call, at the very minimum, call your own 2 senators and ask them to vote no on the cloture motion on Reid's omnibus package, and then let them know that the Mothers Act has been slipped into this omnibus package, and Senator Reid has stated that the omnibus package is totally worthy of being passed by unanimous consent and that all of the legislation is mostly non-controversial and has passed through committee and has passed in the House and has bipartisan support. And he's basically criticizing Tom Coburn for holding it. But the Mothers Act is highly controversial. I have 21 national groups opposed to the Mothers Act, and I have about 88 maybe 8,600, 8,700 signatures from people around the world opposed to this bill. A lot of those people have personally lost either a child, like in the womb or after birth, or they nearly committed suicide or homicide, and it's not anything that should ever be passed by our Senate, much less without debate. So if you go to uniteforlife.org, on the very top of my homepage, there's some stuff that says, like, click here, and there's a couple of CapWiz action items you can sign automatically. And then there's a giant thing that says click here and what you can do, and it's called the urgent.pdf, and it has all of the phone numbers for every senator in the United States Senate and all of their fax numbers, D.C. and district. So if you can't get through, just keep trying or call the district number. And just tell them, you know, you cannot pass this without debate. You need to vote no on cloture, and we're watching to see what you do. And are you going to stand with the pharmaceutical companies, or are you going to protect innocent, helpless children?
And I think that's the thing, that this is designed to damage children, to encourage miscarriages, and, of course, to damage mothers. And just give them the example of Andrea Yates, of course, this woman who drowned 5 of her children. Why? Because she was on these terrible, terrible drugs. And the reason she's in prison is why they can't let the American people know that we're poisoning our people. And some people know what they're doing because they worship a different God. Well, ladies and gentlemen, our guest is Amy Filo. Amy, as always, thank you so very much for being with us. And God bless. We'll look forward to having you again. And please give me a call next week and let me know what happens and see if we're going to be able to have any effect at all on the course of events.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
Good night. God bless.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, we've got an excellent 4-tape set on Prozac. And, of course, we want people to know, and we actually talk about in part about what we've been talking about tonight and about the miscarriages and the abnormalities of the child as far as the cardiac abnormalities, the abnormalities as far as pulmonary hypertension, and there are other, of course, psychological problems that come down the line as far as the child is concerned. We didn't have a chance to get into a lot of this tonight, but so much of this is covered in our four-tape set on Prozac, four-tape, four-CD set. We're proud of these. We have so many tape sets up there on things that you need to know about. You need to know about magnesium. We have a wonderful book on the miracle of magnesium. Most people are magnesium deficient. We have a four-tape set on iodine, and we have an article we put out on iodine because most people are iodine deficient. And, of course, we know that, if you're iodine deficient, it increases your chance of getting cancer of the breast for women and cancer of the prostate in men. We have, of course, four tape sets on genetically modified food. They know that they are, of course, poisoning our people with that. And people say, this could never be going on in America. They're poisoning us with the mercury in our fillings. They're poisoning us with the mercury in the vaccines. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, they have specifically recommended the influenza vaccine because it contains mercury. And, of course, they're giving it to pregnant women in the first trimester when it'll do the maximum amount of harm to the child in utero. Why would they do that? Because we're dealing with wicked people. And when you understand that, it really makes sense. And that's why, of course, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Brotherhood of Darkness. And then, of course, you, Chris, need to get my talk on the Forbidden Secret. That's the Forbidden Secret, and the syllabus comes with that. We have a new DVD out called The Secret Knowledge. The Secret Knowledge. We have a talk. It's called the Planned Police State, and a syllabus that goes with that. And we think that's very important because there we actually include a great deal of material, or at least some material, from the people on the other side, and they will tell you about the organizations that they work through, and how, of course, they have their people planted in both the East and the West, and of course in finance and in education and all sorts of fields. There really are people out there who worship a different God. And until you understand that, until you understand the resurgence of Gnosticism in our society today, until you understand that this is the common religion of theosophy and of the New Age and of Rosicrucianism, and there are 2 million Masons who've sworn allegiance to the great architect of the universe, and that is not the God of the Bible. That is Lucifer. The God of all religions except Christianity and Judaism. Once you understand that, so much of what's going on in the world begins to make sense. So our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We hope you go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And there, of course, you can read our newsletters. They're posted. They're free. You can listen to our radio programs live, archived, on our live feed to the satellite 9 hours a day, MP3. You can watch our videos. We got a great video section. We got a great section on other videos, which are just YouTube clips that will bring you right up to date on things that are happening. And you just scroll down, and we'll just be adding new ones all the time as they come in. And we're setting up a new section. We've only got one thing on it now. It's just a link to a document, but we're putting other documents up there that we think it's important that you have access to. So radioliberty.com is where you want to go, and, of course, we have some essays there, but primarily it's our videos and our radio programs that will keep you up to date with what's going on. I should mention, of course, that tomorrow evening on our 8 o'clock, that's the first hour program, Lindsay Williams will be with us, and we hope that you will enjoy hearing Lindsay as he tells you what he's allowed to say about what the future holds and what he's been told by a man who is affiliated with the people who run the world. That's tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. And so please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision